This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour. With Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
How does our growing population affect our rivers? And how much do we know and understand about our connection to waterways?
We seem to have lost the idea of rivers from our kind of cultural core. They have become a bit of a focus for environmental fights and for allocation disputes. This extraordinary river that there can't be a wider valuing of it as something that's very important to keep in our lives.
And that's taken from a new documentary about the Moorabool River. And the Moorabool flows from the Central Highlands near Ballarat through to Geelong. But sometimes, Jono, the Moorabool barely makes it to its junction with the Barwon River.
Some locals say it's Victoria's most flow-stressed river.
The Moorabool River, by the time you get down to its confluence at Geelong, over 90% of the water has been taken from the river. So where traditionally we had 90 megalitre flows, that's now been reduced to 10 megalitres. So in some years the river barely gets to the confluence with the Barwon River.
And in some parts, people are picking up their kayaks where they would once paddle through and are now having to carry their kayaks. So is it just the Moorabool River, though, that is feeling the impact of population growth?
Very different story in eastern Victoria, where we've got rivers swelling and breaking their banks. So as our communities expand across the state, how does population and our growing population affect our rivers and water systems?
How much do you even know and how much do you use your local waterway, whether it be from fishing to swimming to agriculture and conservation? How connected are you to your local rivers and waterways?
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
Talking about today, the health of rivers, some rivers running dry and others swelling and breaking their banks. And I remember growing up on the Mitchell River in Bairnsdale and knowing just how important that is for everyone in Bairnsdale Ridge. All of the drinking water for Bairnsdale and all the surrounding towns comes from the Mitchell. There's a huge veggie industry that's based on water from the Mitchell River. Everyone, you know, swims in the Mitchell River, kayaks on it, recreates on the Mitchell River. And it was just such an important part of growing up in Bairnsdale. But we also knew there was this kind of industrial angle to it as well, that it was used for farming and that it was part of the catchment. So that's kind of what we're talking about today, that friction between community use, what people love to use rivers for, and the industrial side of things as well.
And how they change and how much you even know about the impact that you may have on your local river. Dr. Alison Puglio is an ecologist. She's an environmental photographer as well, author of Wild Mushrooming, a guide for foragers, amongst many other things. But Alison, you're a part of this documentary on the Moorabool, which has sparked today's conversation. Do you think that just the average person understands what our impacts, our daily lives impacts might be on our rivers and waterways?
Look, I think as Jono said, we all know how dear our rivers are to us. We associate them with all those wonderful times growing up, whether it's fishing or picnicking or whatever. But I think you're absolutely right that I think many of us aren't aware of the greater catchment effects. And when we change the nature of the catchment, that has fundamental effects on the quality of the water in the river, of how much water actually gets to the river, of how that river changes its flows or how it functions. So I think there's been a lot of education campaigns in the last three decades to increase our understanding of that. But I think, you know, as population does grow and the footprint of housing gets bigger, I think we're seeing incredible declines in the amount of water that reaches the river and the quality of that water. So I think we still need more and more education. We need to think very differently about how we're using the water in our homes and elsewhere as well.
Where does the water from the Moorabool go?
So the Moorabool rises in the Wombat Forest. You've got about seven rivers, I think, that actually rise in the Wombat, and three of those go south to the Barwon River, and three go north to the Murray. And so with the Moorabool, it rises in the Wombat, and it meets the Barwon down to I'm just trying to think where the confluence is with the Barwon, but it hits the Barwon, but by the time it reaches it, so much water has been extracted through irrigation, being trapped in various reservoirs. I think we're down to about 10% of the original flow. So we lose an enormous amount of water, and the quality of that water changes by the time it hits the Barwon. So it is one of the most slow-stress rivers in the state, although actually, if you have a look, most of our rivers are fairly highly regulated. The further you get from those main urban centres, the less regulated they are, but we lose an enormous amount in that process.
There's a text here that says our rivers are so polluted now they are dead. Is that too dramatic, do you think, Alison?
Look, I think some of them are. I mean, we've seen in the last 30 years incredible changes, particularly in urban areas that have had much tighter regulation of the industrial effluents that go into the urban creeks. If you take, say catchments of the Yarra River, some of the tributaries like the Darabin and the Merri River have had enormous improvements. We've now got fewer chemicals going in. We've got, say, revegetation of those riparian areas, that's the streamside areas. We've had enormous campaigns through Friends of groups, through Landcare, through the Riverkeepers, through the EPA. There's much more awareness, and people absolutely love those green corridors that have been created. But I do think just that endless increase in demand for the water has also seen a much, you know, reduced water quality of the water that goes into the rivers that actually drain those industrial and urban catchments. The more and more we create impermeable surface through more roads, more concreted areas, through more roofing, we see a decrease in the water quality that actually enters the river. Even though we have some fantastic initiatives such as wetlands that have been created to actually act as filters, certainly, I mean, yeah, there are areas that we have seen dead areas. For example, in parts of the Barwon catchment, we've seen such intensive extraction of groundwater that we actually have seen things such as the groundwater recharge areas being fundamentally changed. We've seen oxidation and acidification of, say, the carbon-rich peat soils in those areas. So there are some dead areas. It's not an over-exaggeration, but we have seen improvements in other areas.
And there's a group of really passionate locals trying to get flows back into the Moorabool. But Lisa is in Werribee and is part of a group in her local area. Morning, Lisa. What's your story?
Hi. Yes, I'm Lisa from the Werribee River Association. I'm actually their chairperson. But I'm also a coordinator of a group called Love Our Streets 3030. And under the banner of the Werribee River Association, we actually have four different cleanup groups in our sort of little catchment area in Werribee. So there's Beach Patrol 3030, there's a clean-up group in Tarneed Hoppers Crossing, one in Windenvale, and I look after the Werribee group. And I just urge everyone to get involved in a local clean-up group. It's something you can do on a Saturday or a Sunday, and it's a great way to sort of give back to the river system. There's an incredible amount of single-use plastics out there, and we all don't like litter, but only a very small fraction of us are actually out there on a weekend.
So that's one part of it, is litter and plastics in waterways. But how's the flow? How's the flow of your local river?
Well, it's great when we get the rains. And, of course, it's great when Melbourne Water gives an environmental flow back into the Werribee River, because it is quite dry and doesn't flow very rapidly. But we've had some recent rain, so that's quite good. Although there's, you know, quite a bit of a runoff as well. Mm. Yeah,
it's good to know as well, that, Lisa, that you do have lots of local community groups that are down there and wanting to be a part of it. And I guess it's a really stark reminder of just our impacts and our footprints on our river systems when you go down there and you have to clean it up. Let's go to Gordon. He's in Ballarat. Gordon, what did you want to say?
I think this topic's a really relevant one. I think, I challenge anyone to drive away from the city and the regional centres and actually have a look at the lack of fencing and the huge amount of development that's putting a lot of crop right up on waterways and streams. There seems to be, there's either a lack of regulation or there's a lack of awareness of it. So, I find it quite astronomical that we could be putting that much animal and crop production right up on waterways. It's you go for a drive and have a look at how many are actually grazed and cropped, and there's a range of things out there that go on, and I don't think it's great for the waterways at all.
I'm going to put that to Alison Gordon. Thank you. Would you agree with what Gordon's saying there, Alison, when we look at just what's butting up along our rivers and waterways?
Oh, look, it's incredibly distressing, the small amount of buffer we have between cropping and grazing and the actual river itself. It needs a big buffer zone or a big riparian area. We do have various acts and policies and bylaws and action plans in place, but we often see the power of big development to coerce governments, and we see these buffer zones getting lesser and lesser, absolutely. So, yes, as I mentioned earlier, it's this ongoing pressure of population, and the river is often the last one to get that consideration. And it sort of seems crazy that we have all of this language of economics about water budgets and entitlements and supply and surplus flows. And I think it's still until we start thinking about a river in terms of ecological terms and rather than economic terms, I think we're not going to see a whole lot of change.
And so you're part of this push calling on the Victorian government to give back 20,000 megalitres per year to the Moorabool River. Do you think they're going to listen? Do you think you'll get anything near that?
Look, I mean, I think we need more than that. I mean, if we take 90% of the flow out of the river, what actually happens to the invertebrates, to the fish, to the plants, to the birds? I mean, if we take 90% of people's houses away, what happens to them? We cause enormous problems if you think of it in that way. I mean, I think the film will make a difference. I think the wonderful work of people such as Cameron Steele and People for a Living Moorabool are making an enormous difference by just chipping away. But I think it's not just the Moorabool. I think it's right across the board. And I think we can learn an enormous amount from places like New Zealand, where back in 2017 we saw a river actually granted legal personhood. The river got legal standing, the Whanganui River. And we've seen that also happen in places like India and Bangladesh and Ecuador and Bolivia. If those countries can do it, if those countries can actually give those rights back to nature and recognise that without these rivers, without that lifeblood, we lose everything. We lose everything in the catchment.
Dr. Alison Pulio, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Ecologist, she's an environmental photographer as well, and is also a forager. She has this incredible encyclopedic knowledge on mushrooms. So if you ever want to know anything about mushrooms, then Alison is certainly your woman.
And I think she was struggling to remember where the confluence of the Moorabool is with the Barwon. And someone on the text line is helping her out here, saying the confluence of the Moorabool is near Geelong at Red Gum Island, Fyansford. So thank you for helping us out with that. Also, Nick from Geelong says, I've been exploring a little along the Moorabool for many years. It's an example of everything that is wrong with catchment management. It should be majestic, but it is tragic. The only answer is intervention, for example, buffer zones and Ballarat using recycled water, etc., which is a really interesting debate. We seem to be very reluctant to do that here in Australia. Yeah. Let's have a chat with Jennifer in the Yarra Valley. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Two things that occurred to me when you're talking about water quality and water amount. I live in a town on the Warburton Highway, and after the power outage recently, I saw a young worker from the local supermarket tipping hundreds of litres of milk out in the car park down a storm water drain. Now, if all the supermarkets that lost power and had to throw out just milk tipped it into the storm water drain, that's got to have an effect on the local creeks and then eventually the Yarra River. So I wonder whether somebody should suggest that if you have to throw out spoiled liquids, you can tip them.
And I wonder how much information and signage there is. I mean, I know over the years we are learning as we go, but, you know, just that concept, Jono, of just tip it down the sink and it magically disappears.
Just tip it down the drain. Well, that's the other thing that strikes me about that. I think the general rule of thumb is for every litre of milk produced, it's taken at least 3 litres of water to produce that litre of milk. So that's a waste of water, you know, that's a real waste. But it's just heartbreaking seeing some of that food that's been damage during this wild weather.
I know, and Jennifer mentioned there, you know, it's flow back into the Yarra. And, you know, when you talk about the Terrelgan Creek or the Mitchell River, we talk about the Moorabool, you know, I never underestimate just how incredible it is to work in the heart of the city and have the Yarra River there as well. You know, it's just something that if I ever need time out, if I ever need to just clear my mind, I just go and I either sit by it or I'll walk around it on the train of a morning when you see it at certain parts of the day. It is just so incredible to have something like that running through the heart of a CBD.
Yeah, the old river that flows upside down. Now, I shouldn't say that, Rish. It's a lovely, lovely river. And
it is. I've, it's awesome. Yeah.
And
don't
so important.
Bag out my river, man.
Not at, it's a beautiful river, the Yarra. And it's been in flood lately too, over the last fortnight or so, like the Terrelgan Creek. And it makes me wonder, you know, have we changed the course of these rivers so much that when they do flood, are we having more severe floods? Adam Lovell is Executive Director of the Water Services Association of Australia. Morning, Adam.
Good morning to you both.
Are we meddling too much with our rivers?
Good question. I think in some respects we are. I think the pressures from both urban and agricultural and mining use right across the country is certainly growing. And I think population growth in particular for our urban areas is often it's both a challenge, but it's also an opportunity. The challenge is, I think, is having that connection that people love their connection to their waterways, and we've seen that through the COVID. You know, nothing but encouragement to access green space for mental health. But that green space, of course, has to be green through water. And so, what I don't think that we have right now in Australia is a really coherent approach to the way, for instance, we manage stormwater. Often it's sort of quite an opportunistic way that a local water utility, local water business, or a local government will actually try to harvest that stormwater to keep a green space green or to keep a tree canopy there. But really, we don't have a systemic way of really, you know, putting the funds in place, putting a pricing plan in place to actually make that happen right across the country.
But why is that, do you think, Adam? Why has that never been put in place?
I think largely because growth over the past 20 years in Australia has been so rapid that we just haven't been able to keep up. And so our infrastructure is more reactive than sort of proactive. And so there's a lot of plans being put in place. There's I can think of Barwon Water have done a fantastic job over the past 12 months with their planning for their sustainable water plans and integrated water management too. So they're looking at the urban form, particularly for those greenfield areas, looking at the urban form, looking at the best ways to manage every drop of water that comes onto the site and leaves the site. Because you want to, you also want to have those environmental flows. Absolutely, I agree with the previous speakers and the article too. You want to have those environmental flows, but you also want to manage all of the drops of water that come onto a site for the best possible purpose. And what we haven't seen in Australia yet is a really coherent approach to recycled water, the use of recycled water, either for just for gardens or for drinking. We haven't seen a really coherent approach to the way we manage stormwater for greening space, also for drinking purposes. So these are all opportunities that have really sprung up over the past 20 years, and we've really got to take these opportunities now to plan for the future. Look what the urban form looks like and how do we manage every drop of water around those sites.
And we were just talking about the Moorabool River and this documentary that I think is premiering in Ballarat on Saturday. Cameron Steele has been a big part of that documentary and has been advocating for the Moorabool River. He's from Bannockburn. G'day, Cameron.
G'day, and thanks for taking an interest in making it a focus of your program. Really appreciate it.
No worries. So what are the realistic prospects of getting an extra 20,000 megalitres flowing down the Moorabool?
Oh, look, I think eventually it has to happen. To what degree it happens, the government's actually undertaking a review of water strategy, and it's part of the Central Region Sustainable Water Strategy that was initiated under Thwaites and Bracks. And over that journey, the river did get 2,500 megalitres of environmental flow. There is a real sense that climate change is had an enormous impact over the last 15 years, and the government's own figures show that 20,000 megalitres less inflows into the Moorabool River. So we've got a river that we actually had some good hopes for, but those hopes are being ripped away, particularly through climate change. I think there's a real appetite at the moment to do some stuff on the Moorabool River in the way of enhancing flows, and that will come from the water authorities obviously giving up some of their entitlements.
Yeah, and Cameron, you're right. This has sparked today's conversation, and it's a wonderful documentary that you've made if anybody would like to look into the Moorabool River documentary. So thank you so much for calling through. Adam Lovell is also with you, Executive Director of Water Services Association of Australia, and a part of this doco was looking at just, I guess, the human impact on our rivers and our waterways. There's two texts here that I'd like to get your opinion on, Adam. One saying we've actually just built too many houses alongside our rivers and waterways, just too many built up along old waterways. And another from Carolyn Castlemaine saying, we moved to central Victoria over 30 years ago. There was a healthy creek running through our 4-hectare property at the time. Within 2 years, a couple of neighbours built dams alongside that creek on their land, totally stopping the flow of the water on our land and beyond. I hate to think of the impact of just two landholders have made, let alone countless other tree changes. When we see people up and uprooting their lives and moving and population growing, surely it's all got to eventually have an impact.
Oh, absolutely. You know, with population growth, obviously comes, you know, further and further sprawl. And sprawl brings with it hard surface. And hard surface brings different type of runoff too. It's much more sporadic. And what we've seen more and more through the impacts of climate change is all those signals have been tweaked higher and higher. So rainfall events are becoming much more extreme. Heat events are becoming much more extreme. So we're getting quite a few challenges with as there's more and more sprawl right up to the creek lines. And in fact, what we saw in most in a lot of the capital cities around the country is that a lot of those creeks and swamps were actually put underground through pipelines. So people didn't even have access to the waterways themselves. And that brings its own sort of problem. So there are many problems that we're creating, but I really like to think that we're creating a whole lot of opportunities for innovation too. And that's where I'd love to see, you know, a real focus on the way that we can reuse water either at a household level or at a precinct level or at a local development level to keep it on site to release some for local environmental flows. And be able to keep really cool, green and healthy environments, not just for humans, obviously for ecosystems as well.
What you're talking about there, I mean, a big part of that is using recycled sewage and turning that back into drinking water, right?
Well, there's two ways. There's a number of ways you can actually do it. You can purify recycled water. They do it in Perth. This is not Robinson Crusoe stuff, right? This is 35 cities and towns already around the world use purified recycled water for drinking purposes, and that you can also use recycled water for non-potable purposes. You can use stormwater for greening of areas as well. So you don't always have to use it for drinking purposes. Right now in southeast Queensland, they're looking to spark up their purified recycled water system. It's coming. It's being talked about more and more. It's certainly come down in cost, so it equates more with seawater desalination. But it's not the only answer. And I think the most important thing is that the local communities actually have a say in what their water security options look like into the future. And there's huge programs going on, I know, in Victoria right now. Looking at involving the community, engaging the community over the long term.
I wonder how much of a reality that is, though. Sometimes I always wonder whether it's a lot of marketing spin saying, you know, we want to involve the community in how their water is used. Adam, stay with us because Neil's in Gellibrand and he may have an opinion on this. Neil, do you think that the community can have a say in how their water is used and how their water is managed?
Yeah, they really need to because that's what we've seen really over the last 30 years, that urban water corporations, when a drought comes, they there's a panic. Urban, of course, you know, they take precedence, urban water consumers. We've seen here that there was massive groundwater pumping during the last drought, the millennial drought, and it has, Dr. Puglio mentioned, you know, it's acidified the swamps around here. We're getting about half a ton of sulfuric acid flowing into the Barwon River every day during the wetter times of the year. That's because it's been polluted through over extraction from groundwater. So, you know, but it's very hard to get through to the urban water corporations because when they're panicking, when they're short of water, they just take the water. So there isn't a real good dialogue. There's a disconnect between cities and country areas.
And Neil, you're involved in a local landcare group. I think we really need to pay some attention to that, because a lot of the work that landcare does actually affects waterways, you know, planting trees along waterways and advocating for better flows and doing lots of, you know, weed removal and that sort of thing. It's incredibly important.
Well, of course it is, and we're keeping a very good eye on the health of these rivers, and it's going down. I mean, I think all your callers who are living in country areas, they're talking about degraded rivers. They're never talking about that they're improving much. Yes, we do. We're doing our best, but these larger kind of policy issues are around water allocation, they're the real problem.
Good on you, Neil. Thank you for your call. 1300 222 774. Adam Lovell, Executive Director of Water Services Association of Australia, thank you very much for your time as well.
Absolute pleasure. Good to be with you.
Good on you. Thanks, Adam. Lots of texts around where people live and how their waterways are affected. This, I live in Warburton. All of our household water except for toilets run straight into storm water. I can see where my neighbours are having a shower because it's all just foaming up out of a pipe, opening into the gutter. It all ends up in the waterways that feed our river. Yuck, says this person, and I'm concerned.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio.
Oh, mothers, let's go. Let's go down, come on down. Come on, mothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray.
Basically any excuse to be able to play even just a snippet of that song. So beautiful, although I do have images of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Me too.
Slightly different.
Me too. But it's just such a beautiful song, isn't it?
It really is. We're talking about rivers today and the health of our rivers. We are deliberately not talking about the Murray Darling today, Jono, when we're looking at rivers, because that is such a huge part of this conversation. We were going to, but what we'll do is we'll take that section of today's show and we'll dedicate an entire hour to how important it is, why it's so confusing, the politics behind it, the ownership behind it, and we'll do that at another time.
It is just, I mean, it's the largest, the most complex river system in Australia. It covers 1 million square kilometres of southeastern Australia across New South Wales, Queensland, South Australia, Victoria and the ACT. So I think that deserves a show in itself, the Murray Darling. So we'll just hold off on that. But we are just talking about how you use your local river and how it's going. This one says Lake Eildon is now in its third year with massive blue-green algae. Kayaking on the lake feels and looks like paddling through green pea soup. Huge swathes of thick algae moves back and forth. Runoff from fertilisers is much of the problem. So we are hearing some negative stories, but we're hearing some positive ones as well about how people are trying to protect their local waterways.
Dr. Jess Reeves is an environmental scientist at the Federation of the University of Gippsland. Now, the Morwell River is something that you're passionate about, Jess.
Yes, so I'm here in the beautiful Latrobe Valley at the moment, and the Morwell's certainly been seeing some decent flow over the last week or so.
Yeah, now it's been in the news lately because there's talk that it will have to be diverted for the seventh time so that it doesn't flow into the Yallourn mine, just because I think that's running on at about quarter speed, the Yallourn mine. There's only about one of their generators working at the moment because of some damage there. So what are the chances that this river will have to be diverted for the seventh time?
I am not up to the latest details of what's happening with that diversion, but rather than a major diversion as has happened in the past, from what I understand, this is a temporary fix until they re-stabilise the site again.
Can you tell us about the history of the Morwell River and how important it's been?
Yeah, absolutely. So Morwell River, it's about 150 k's east of Melbourne. It starts in the headwaters of the beautiful Strathlecky Ranges in Morwell National Park. And it comes down through farming land, through Ballara and other townships like that, and then heads across to the Latrobe Valley. But, of course, this is where our major area for brown coal-fired power generation is. And the Morwell, unfortunately, has had to be diverted around those major coal pits, particularly what was the Hazelwood pit and the Yallourn pit as well. And it actually goes in a pipeway through the centre of the Yallourn pit.
The idea of getting it back and having it be vibrant and having it as an eel fishery once again, is that possible? I know that's something that you're hoping to have happen at the Morwell River.
It's my little romantic dream. There's a lot of talk at the moment as coal mines are closing of what's going to happen, both with the pits but also the landforms more broadly. And I'd love to see if there is water involved in that rehabilitation, that it's incorporated into the system, that the river systems are brought back to health. Anyone over 60 will tell you about swimming and fishing and catching eels in the Morwell River, and I would dearly love to see that back again.
Dr. Jess Reeves, thanks so much for your time and for your passion as well. Environmental scientist at the Federation University of Gippsland. And that's what we've learnt today, Jono, is that there is a lot of passion and interest for those to know about their local rivers and waterways. If you've missed any part of this program, subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast. You can go back and listen. And as we said, we will pick up and we will cover the Murray-Darling at another time.
So that's the Conversation Hour for today. Thanks for listening and have a good one.